Hello and welcome to another episode of Desert Island Dishes with me, Margie. This is the podcast where every week I ask my guests to choose their seven desert island dishes. These range from finding out about the dish that most reminds them of their childhood, the best dish they've ever eaten, and of course, the last dish they would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island. If you're listening and you haven't yet left a review, please do. It only takes a few seconds, and I know I'm always banging on about it, but genuinely, it is very much appreciated, and I read them all. So I hope you're all having a good week. Thank you so much for the lovely emails you keep sending me about the podcast. I'm genuinely blown away to have so many of you listening, and you all seem to be telling your friends, which is amazing. Thank you. This week, I wanted to put out one of the earlier episodes with the amazing Jenny. So many more people are listening now, and with such a big back catalogue, I thought some of you may not have gone back and listened to this one, but it's well worth a listen. I first came across Jenny and her amazing business years ago now, and genuinely just thought it was the best idea ever for a business. And it's been so inspiring to see her go from strength to strength. I just love speaking to these amazing entrepreneurs doing incredible things and hearing how they got to where they are today. I find it very inspiring, and I know you'll enjoy hearing from Jenny, the condiment queen. That isn't her official title, but I'm going to go with it anyway. Without further ado, here is today's episode. Today's castaway is Jenny Costa. Jenny founded Rubies in the Rubble back in 2011, which started out as a stall in Borough Market, and now her products are stocked in Waitrose, Selfridges, Harrods, and many, many more places. Jenny studied maths at university before working for a hedge fund in the city for 2 years. She wasn't sure what she wanted to do with her degree, but she knew she wanted to do something of her own and to do something she was passionate about. After coming across the fact that half of all the food we produce is never used, and yet billions of people don't have enough to eat, Rubies in the Rubble was born. Jenny has said, "We need to start valuing food again, treating it like treasure and seeing it as something precious rather than a cheap commodity." Welcome to Desert Island Dishes,
Thank
Jenny.
Thank you.
So for anyone who doesn't know, what is Rubies in the Rubble?
Rubies in the Rubble is a brand of delicious tasting condiments made from fruit and veg that would otherwise be discarded.
Amazing.
Thank you.
I remember reading about you right back when you started, and I just thought it was just the most genius idea. Was it a real light bulb moment?
I think people always start businesses in really different ways. And yeah. I had been brought up on a farm on the west coast of Scotland in the middle of nowhere. I mean, my best friend was my sister. Not so much out of choice, but actually she was so, I mean, we get on wonderfully still. But
she'll be delighted to hear that.
She'd probably say the same, but she is still my best friend. And we were such a close-knit small family. But being in the middle of nowhere, you don't eat out as much. You were growing everything. My mother's an amazing fruit and veg gardener, and she would grow fruit and veg that would last the whole winter round. She was always thinking of clever ways to preserve it. And we were always really imaginative as well in the kitchen. We always had different rotas going during the week, where one week was feed the family for under, I don't know what it was in those days, but under a couple of pounds, or
That's
feed
so
the
cool.
family for anything on the farm, or Italian night and things. And even from being really young, food was very exciting and fun. And it was always a new sort of playful element to it, but really resourceful as well. And then I went off to university, I did a master's, and I ended up just following everyone else and went straight into, I got a job in a hedge fund in the city of London, and didn't really think about what I wanted to do, but it was great having money straight after university. And I was there for about 2.5 years, but probably within a year realized I was in the wrong place. And I kept on having this sort of thought in the back of my head of, if I'm still here by the time I'm 40, I'll be really disappointed. Like, I really want to do something that I'm passionate about. And sadly, finance, just I wasn't passionate about it. And then randomly one day I read an article on food waste, and it wasn't something that I'd ever really thought of as a big issue, because at home we were always sort of very resourceful or thought about things. And the more I read about how much 40% of farms' crop is often rejected, it was a third of food that we waste globally. and the cost of that food waste, the environmental impact, it's the biggest single contributor to a carbon footprint globally. I just couldn't understand the numbers. It also didn't make business sense to me as well, that we're so wasteful.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And when we're sort of worried and panicked about feeding the globe sort of sustainably in the future, the growing population, I just wanted to raise awareness of this, but also to create a really positive solution to it and something that could sit on a shelf and people could enjoy and buy into it. So it was very quick after reading articles. I then started going along to big markets and seeing things with my own eyes. And as I cycled away from one night, I just thought of my mother preserving things. I said, I'm going to start a fun brand. I'm going to take fruit and veg that's discarded in big volume and turn it into a range of relishes and condiments and call it Rubies in the Rubble.
Oh, I just love it so much. And when you put it like that, it is just a no-brainer. It's kind of unbelievable that no one was doing it before, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose people have been doing it for generations in their own homes.
Yeah.
But it was such a taboo, or especially back in 2010 when I started researching food waste. It was a very hippie notion and people thought of bin divers or waste food.
I want to ask you about that. But let's take a pause and talk about your first desert island dish of the day. And that's the dish that most reminds you of your childhood.
This is probably a bit of an odd one, but cheese souffle.
Oh, yeah. Nothing odd about a cheese souffle. Yum.
It was always something. Mum was really good at making cheese souffle. And even when I was really young, always loved them. And it was a Sunday night meal. And she would put one in the Argo, and it was always, you had to be there at the right time because it might flop. And it was just such a delicious and light and sort of almost pillowy, cloudy meal with a bit of salad alongside it or some potatoes. I loved it. So it's a really comfort meal for me.
Definitely. That's a great option. Are you good at making your own soufflés?
I actually have never tried.
They're actually easier than they look. You should.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I think people are always really scared of them because when you take them out of the oven, you do kind of have to eat them, but they're easier than
I might lose my magic when I suddenly realize.
Oh, no. I ruined your memory. So I read that when you started, you didn't always get a positive response from the Borough Market customers because they weren't used to the idea of using these kind of ingredients and the idea that it's not actually waste, it's just surplus product that you're using.
Right at the beginning, actually for the first 6 months or so, I never really told the story of how we made the products on the back of the pack. Just because of Borough Market, and as I started explaining things and people were trying and tasting things, and I started explaining the ethos behind the brand, I could see people hesitating and putting things back.
Yeah.
And it's probably the language I was using as well, because it's very hard to describe it in a quick sentence. And as soon as you call it food waste, and I really shouldn't call it food waste because it's not waste, it's perfectly good produce that's the wrong shape or size or color. And it's really just about people seeing food as a natural product, comes out of the ground in all shapes and sizes. It's dependent on the weather, can change if it starts raining before the harvest or whatever those reasons are. But actually since then, food waste has become such a topical notion and people really, they have made the link between sustainability with it, that it's a really positive story.
Definitely.
To tell.
Yeah, it does seem, obviously, there's still a long way to go, but we have made progress. I was just going to say, I mean, it's not the same thing as this at all, but I always get really nervous when I buy cakes from a bake sale because I always just imagine lots of cats in the kitchen. And I guess it's the same kind of thing. Like you say waste and you imagine people kind of rummaging through a bin, but obviously that is not the case.
Yeah. And I think it's so right as well, even in the presentation of something on a cake stall and things.
Yeah.
But with our products, I was really passionate as well for the first 6 months to make sure that they sold just on taste.
Yeah.
And that they were great tasting products and people wanted to put them with something else.
And I think you're so clever because they're premium products and they look premium, they taste premium. And then it's sort of, the dichotomy of the message behind it.
Yeah.
Very clever.
Thank you. We're really passionate about that. And it's sort of telling the story that it is 100% fresh fruit and veg direct from the farm. It's never been in a freezer or a fridge. Yeah. And it almost enhances the products.
Yeah, definitely.
No, we've got a lot of great taste awards, which we're so passionate and proud of.
Yeah, it's amazing. Okay, let's talk about your second desert island dish of the day. And that's the first dish you learned to cook.
This first My first ever dish actually doesn't have great memories for me. Well, it was probably the one highlight of nursery. I used to cry going to nursery every single day.
Oh, no. And
Mum used to remember putting me in the pickup truck and driving me there, just floods of tears. And she was always felt really bad about dropping me off, but also wanted her spare time, I suppose. But the one great thing was that we occasionally had, we had tiny little hobs and we would make chocolate Rice Krispies.
Oh.
And yeah.
That doesn't sound all bad.
It was the real highlight. And I used to remember, I loved just stirring it, melting the butter, getting the chocolate in, and then bringing something home that you were really excited by and couldn't wait to eat.
That's such a cool, yeah, I'm so glad that people do that at nursery. That's so fun.
Yeah, it was great. I do remember a lot of, it was always that grab around the upper part of your arm that always felt when you were getting dragged around.
Oh, yeah.
That's the biggest memory.
Also, I wonder how much of the Rice Krispies actually made it into the cake wrappers and actually just like eaten with a spoon. So I read a piece where you said that you'd been cooking at home and you'd been using all the damsons and you made damson pie, damson gin, damson jam. Can we talk about damson gin? Because is it similar to sloe gin?
Yeah, I suppose it is. Exactly the same sort of, you let it sit in the gin once, or however you would choose to make it, or your base alcohol. But yeah, very similar to that.
Yum.
That's delicious.
I read that and I just couldn't stop thinking about it. Me too. Gin's the best. So obviously the most important thing with the business is that the ingredients you use have to pass the taste test, and it's not about a beauty contest. And I wondered, there has been in recent years a surge by supermarkets to use wonky veg, but who decided in the first place that consumers wanted perfect looking vegetables? Like, how did that become a thing?
I don't know which way round it was. We've done a lot of work with the sustainability teams, and actually Tesco's are probably they were the first to drive food waste forward and to try and reduce it in their stores and upstream and downstream of their supply chain. There's been a lot of trialing of putting all sorts of shapes, fruit and veg, on the shelves. And when they tried to just mix it all in together, they always said that the wonky ones never sold and they were always the ones that were left. And so they were playing to what the consumer wanted, and that they didn't want to fill their shelves with something that the consumer never bought.
Yeah.
So I think it is a bit of a chicken and an egg. You go to Europe or this continent and actually France, Spain, they're incredibly good at just... everything is all sorts of shapes and sizes, and they just chuck it all in.
It is so very weird. Seasonal. It's so strange that became a thing that we just like cared.
What? Yeah.
I mean, like, talk about impossible beauty standards for humans, and now we're putting it on our vegetables. It's crazy.
There's also a lot now. I mean, I've seen a lot of supermarkets trying to do wonky fruit and veg boxes. And we were talking to one of the farmers and he said there's somebody on the line looking out for the odd shaped one. And so it became almost another job because people didn't want just smaller ones or slightly out of spec. So an apple that's just a bit bigger in dimension. They wanted the real freaks.
Oh my goodness. That's like creating a whole new problem.
Yeah.
So that they're not wonky enough. Okay, moving on to the third desert island dish of the day. That is the best dish that you've ever eaten.
Oh, I feel like this is a game I play a lot with friends, but best dish I've ever eaten was, I was really fortunate to travel around Japan when I was about 22. And I think in Tokyo on the fish market at about 5 a.m. and having platters of sashimi and different little rolls. I mean, it was fantastic.
Oh,
but just being that fresh. I am obsessed with Japanese cooking, and I think anything done sort of in their beautiful, delicate way that they do things, and so meticulous and all about ingredients and flavors and combinations and keeping things clean and simple. That would be the dish that I would want as my last dish of life.
Oh, no, we're going to get on to that later,
no.
Jenny. You have to come up with another one. Are you good at cooking Japanese food?
Not very good. My sister's actually really good. She sort of bought all the rolling kits and things, but I can do occasional things for miso soup and things. But
yeah. You're a better eater of
Japanese
food.
There's other people that do it better.
So I read an interview where you said at the beginning, everyone was like, love the story, but no one buys chutneys. Yeah. And you sort of, I feel, single-handedly brought chutneys back because they're no longer retro. Yeah. Have you always made chutneys?
Yeah, I mean, my mum, childhood memories were there was always a pot on the boil, and mum is not a sort of a lover of cooking. She's fine at cooking, but she's not a sort of typical housewife cook, and with a, like, her cakes are often an inch high and never rising.
But let's hope she doesn't listen to this, Jenny.
I'm sure she'd agree. She's an artist and she's really creative, and her passions were really gardening. And because she put so much work into growing her fruit and veg, she'd always make sure that she was turning it into something. And her signature chutney was, or it still is, her rhubarb chutney. Everybody's obsessed with it.
Would you have that with something savory?
I mean, the typical use is sort of with cheese and bread and ham and things, but actually at home we have it on the table for every meal, and we'll put it with meats or salads and all sorts of things. Oh,
that sounds amazing.
But yeah, and I think growing up with seeing that and seeing that it's an easy thing. She'd have something on the boil and be in and out of the kitchen. And she would always say, you just need to get your ratios of sugar, vinegar, and fruit together. And then you can really play with all your spices and add roasted nuts or whatever you fancy putting in.
I mean, yeah, they are a great condiment.
Yeah.
One of the best. But so obviously the food mission is an enormous one, but then to be focusing on a product that wasn't necessarily trendy at the time, I feel like you set yourself a big task.
Looking back, I've had it so many times in the past where I just thought, why didn't I go into something that was already a weekly shopping bag purchase from the majority of people in the country? And it still does. I think as a brand, we often question sort of what we stand for. And I think it's really good to know what your purpose is and your aim is the whole time. And it makes decisions of what products you go into very easily.
Yeah.
So the lovely thing with a chutney or a relish is that it naturally preserves fruit and veg and extends the shelf life and adds value. And that is in itself sort of incorporates what our brand stands for.
Yeah, it makes so much sense.
Yeah. But now we're looking, I mean, we've just launched a range of 3 ketchups that are, again, quite funky, fun flavors. And we're constantly looking to innovate new areas. So all of our relishes, I think, are really playful and they're not the typical kind of traditional chutneys.
No, they're all really creative. But when you were starting and you were going to the buyers and you were telling them the story, and they were saying, we don't know what to do with chutneys. How did you overcome?
We had a lot of buyers when they tasted our chutneys, just being like, you shouldn't call them chutneys. You should call them relishes
calling them chutneys.
No, I call them chutneys as well the whole time. But they were sort of saying, immediately, if you say relish, it opens it up to me thinking I can put this in my burger. I can put this on the menu alongside an egg.
That's so true.
And it's meant, our spicy tomato is used with masses of brunch cafes that put it with a poached egg. It goes really well with avocado on toast. It's fantastic with hummus. It's incredibly fresh. And because they're 80% fruit, it's not the typical sort of dried fruits or sugary base. They are really sort of lighter.
Yeah. How interesting is that the difference that one word can make?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
It's the same product.
Amazingly different.
Yeah.
But we are now sort of thinking, I think we have been very fortunate as a brand to, first of all, we're a very unique and quite a small and different brand for people to switch over to from buying anything else. And then we're selling them a product that they never knew they wanted or needed. So we're really hoping we're sort of launching into mayonnaises and the ketchups that will be an easier way to get into people's sort of mindset of it's an easier switch if they're normally buying ketchup to switch and just try something new.
Yeah. And then that's a good gateway to the rest of the brand.
And then we'll get them on the banana ketchup.
Yeah. No, I want to ask you about the banana ketchup, but let's take a pause and talk about the 4th Desert Island dish of the day. And that is your favorite sandwich.
Oh, we used to have competitions at home on our sandwich making.
Did you win?
Dad is actually very good. It's all about getting right to the crust the edges.
I love a competitive dad.
But I think nowadays, my favorite, I'm obviously obsessed with my condiments. So I'd probably put the spicy tomato on with some hummus.
Yeah.
Slices of avocado if I can. But if I like just a strong, mature cheddar and then a lid on it.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds great.
Yeah. And I actually, if I could have a choice, I'd probably toast the bread unless it's sort of very, very fresh and great. But I do like a bit of toasted sourdough or something.
Mm, yeah, that sounds like a great sandwich. I'm going to have to go home and make that now. So you are very clear that the business is very much a business and not a charity. Mm. And it's just a genius business model, because at the start, you were, I understand, literally getting the ingredients for free, or how did it work?
Yeah. So at the beginning, when I first started, the first 2 years we were working in our own kitchen, and I employed women from Crisis, a homeless shelter, and they would help make the product. And we were based on a wholesale fruit and veg market where they started at midnight and finished around 6 a.m. And so when we arrived at 7 and we went around the market and took any unsold fruit and veg that was destined for the tip, and they got charged per pallet to throw away anything. And so we would pay a nominal price just so that it was a sale, and it got classified as a sale, but it was incredibly cheap. It was, you'd get a pallet or a tray of mangoes for 40p or whatever.
And did the traders look at you like you were mad? Or
no, I think they love what we were trying to do. And they love that we were supporting women in the area as well. Yeah. And it saved them money by instead of having to throw it away.
So it just makes so much sense.
Yeah, it worked really, really well. And then as we grew, I think the fruit and veg on a wholesale fruit and veg market is really on its last legs. It wouldn't be good the next day.
Yeah.
And so we could turn it into a product that day and preserve it. Whereas the real food waste that I was wanting to tackle was on large scale farmers that had supermarket contracts, and it was that the apple was over 70 millimeters, or a banana had the wrong curvature.
Oh God, Jenny, that's just so depressing.
The cucumber hit a sort of branch and didn't sort of grow straight, so it couldn't fit in the plastic sleeve.
Oh,
and
oh my God, that is so sad.
And for those sort of reasons.
A cucumber that can't fit in the plastic sleeve. It's heartbreaking.
All the bendy ones get left.
But this was obviously a really good place to start.
Yeah, and it really helped us learn about the seasons, learned about what reasons something would be discarded for. And then from there, we started getting approached by large-scale farmers, and we started working direct with them. And then I really wanted, just because, again, looking back at what our purpose was to say that this had value and this was perfectly good fruit and veg. And so to make sure we always paid the farmers for their produce.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a discounted cost, because it costs us a lot more to have to process it than machine done. But it allowed us to create a really good relationship with the farmers.
Yeah. And then I was reading, I don't know if this is true, but so now you work with huge people like Virgin, and you'll go and you'll collect all of the apples that are left over from the train's catering service, and then you turn them into a chutney, and then you sell them back to Virgin. I mean, that's incredible.
We have a wonderful relationship with Virgin. Yeah. They approached us about a year and a half ago and said, we have some apples and bananas wasted on our trains. Could you do anything with them? And I assumed it would be a basket or two. And so I was really hesitant. Yeah. I said, why don't you just monitor it for 3 months and then come back to us and see what that looks like every week? And they came back saying, well, on average each week, it's around 1,000 apples and 1,300 bananas. And so we thought, wow, well, we couldn't understand it at the beginning, but they said, well, we do 90 journeys up and down from London to Glasgow every single day. And especially for our first class, we're wanting to refresh that fruit and veg bowl. We never know if people are going to take an apple or not. And so we've got to make sure that there's stuff waiting for there at the end of the line. And it's a lot of journeys, and then over the week it builds up. And so from there, we then trained all of the managers on the train. Instead of just chucking them, they would put them back in the ones that were perfect and weren't didn't have bruises and things. They put them back in the boxes and put them on the train and take them back down to Euston. And when they had a full pallet, which is about every 10 days, we would take that, which is around a ton, and turn it into the West Coast apple chutney, which we created for the trains. And we sold it back in little glass jars for the cheese boards on first class. And now it's just launched into their standard sandwiches as well.
That is so clever.
It's great. And I love the way that they think about business.
Yeah.
Bothered to care about it and wanted to do something about it.
It's so great that they approached you and that businesses are starting to think about that kind of thing.
It's great.
So I have a question. Mm. It might be a silly one, but I feel like you have started a bit of a trend, and now there are other companies doing not the same thing, but similar things in using excess fruits. And I wondered
is the problem so big that the more of these companies, the better? Or are you now having to compete for surplus crops?
The problem is huge. I mean, in the UK, with it can be seasonal. But for example, currently we're working very closely with one large tomato farmer in Kent. And he has between 15 and 30 tons of tomatoes every week being discarded. And he calls...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and that's one farmer. And that he actually is very good at dealing with his waste, but it's because supermarket contracts, they'll never give him an actual forecast. They give him a predicted forecast. And so he's always wanting to make sure that he has enough. And it be tomatoes being so perishable as well, if they haven't got a buyer, they're going to go to waste within 10 days. So there is an enormous amount of surplus out there.
Farmers work so hard and it's just awful.
Well, that I think as well, the amount of work that goes into growing something and getting it to your plate. But I would really encourage people to get in and it's hard, I think, in the scaling up stage. We found that really hard, and to sort of find your way and find where the problem is that you're going to address.
Yeah.
But as a brand, or Rubies in the Rubble, what I'm passionate about is food resources and food sustainability.
Yeah.
And I believe that the planet has the resources to feed its people. We just need to look after food and treat it better. So if we ever got to a point where food waste wasn't the problem, I don't feel like as a brand I'm addressing food waste, I'm addressing food resources, and I would look into the next most resourceful way. And I think it's really interesting. I don't know what that would look like at the moment, of whether it's local or seasonal, or at the moment we are vegan as a brand, but I definitely enjoy meat and just make sure it's sourced properly and reduce my amount. But it'd be interesting to see what that next product could be.
Yeah, really interesting. Watch this space. So the fifth Desert Island dish of the day is the dish that you eat the most often.
Oh, it's probably very boring because I'm at work every lunchtime.
Yeah.
I used to hate soups and I couldn't understand why anyone would eat soup. And now I've really got into
it. Oh, really?
Yeah. A chunky soup is like my go-to.
What would be your go-to flavor?
Recently, I've been getting into pea and mint.
Oh, that's a good combo.
It's a great combo. Yeah. But you need a good bit of chunk of bread or something alongside it just to keep you going.
Yeah, definitely. Are you making the soup yourself?
No, sadly not.
We don't all have time to be making soups all the time.
We've got some lovely little sandwich places nearby.
Are you a summer souper?
No, not really. In summer, I'm more salads for lunch. Yeah. But in the evening, I suppose that's, I think, where you get your diversity. But in lunchtime, I'm just having the same... I've got to get out of it.
But I think a lot of people are creatures of habit when it comes to food. Like, I definitely get into cycles where I just like obsessively have the same thing every day. And then 2 weeks later, I'm like, on to the next. Let's talk about the actual products themselves. I'm obsessed with the tomato chutney. It's so good. And I really want to try the banana ketchup. I wondered, do you still make any of the original offerings?
Yeah, I weirdly made... some of the tomato stuff just the other day, and we used to have a green tomato chutney which we never sort of took mainstream, but I loved it and I had a load of green tomatoes, so made another little batch. But I'm normally just making chutneys out of things, especially when I'm at home and we've got a sort of glut of something, playing around with those. But because every day I'm surrounded by jars, I'm often just grabbing one off the shelf instead.
That's definitely understandable. What's the most popular product?
The most popular is actually probably the spicy tomato chutney. I think it's such an all-rounder. It's really unique. It's the first product we ever made. Great Taste Award winner. And it's just been a fantastic seller. I think because it has got that freshness. And again, especially because a lot of people are eating a lot of hummus, a lot of avocados, brunch places love it. It has a real all-rounder. And then slowly getting in the fiery tomato ketchup, which we've based on sun-dried tomatoes, is becoming very popular.
Yum.
That also got a great taste award this year. And then our banana ketchup.
Yeah. So talk to me about the banana ketchup. Are you having that with savory?
Yes. Yeah. So we did used to make, it was a banana chutney, and it was sold on Ocado, and it was always very small sales, but it did very well and had great reviews. And last year we decided this is silly. We've got to really tighten our range, and we took it off the shelf, and we suddenly got a flood of emails from people.
People were rioting.
You were wondering where it had gone from. And so we started emailing back asking what they used it for.
What did they use it for?
They kept on saying, well, I put it on a chicken burger. I have it along with halloumi, grilled halloumi. I put it with sweet potato and it's fantastic. It's got that chili and the ginger and it's great with Caribbean food or Indian food. It's sort of
This is a stupid question, but does it taste really banana-y?
You definitely can taste banana. If you didn't like bananas, you wouldn't like it. But it's got the sweetness of, I suppose it's naturally very sweet because of the bananas. Then you've got the heat of the chili and the garlic and the ginger coming through. So actually, banana ketchup is a big seller in Indonesia. And I can't remember what state it is in America, but it's quite a Caribbean thing. And so when we sort of brought it over, a lot of people were like, oh, I've had that before and it's Caribbean foods and it is very good with sweet potato. But yeah, so when we got that feedback, we decided to take it out of a small glass jar and put it in a bottle and sell it as a ketchup. And suddenly sales just flew. And it's really funny how you position something. And
yeah, it's really interesting.
How people are going to then think of how they use it as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Well done, Jenny. Right, we're on to the sixth desert island dish of the day, and that is your go-to dinner party dish.
Go-to dinner party dish is probably, I think I still have this hope that my dinner parties are going to look a little bit like Ottolenghi's.
Yes.
So it's often a lot of big salads, normally a lot of cooked grilled salads as well with lots of grains, and there's always some pomegranates in there and grilled
love
halloumi.
Love a pomegranate.
I love meals where you can have a little bit of different things, and it obviously goes very well with condiments as well. But I love that sort of sharing and big sort of feast style dinner parties. It's also incredibly easy because you can do a lot of it beforehand and then be really relaxed when everyone arrives.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the key, isn't it? You don't want to be like in the kitchen, chained to the oven.
Yeah. Never a cheese souffle for a dinner.
No. Oh my goodness. No. Cheese souffle is reserved for Sunday nights.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I liked your advice that I read where you said that people should have a good rummage in their fridge and cupboards before they go shopping, because it is really easy to forget what you've got in there. And that's just like a small thing that people can do to make a difference. And I wondered, do you have a fallback dish that after you've done your fridge raid, you always cook?
So before I started Rubies in the Rubble, and Frith, who was one of my best friends that I lived with for a long time, she's loves cooking. And even on a Monday night, she'd come back and she would have dreamed about making some roast and doing a jus alongside and things. And I would always just look at what's in the fridge, put everything together. And normally it had a lot of condiments going with it. And my fallback is normally a real sort of mishmash of, it ends up almost like a stew.
Okay.
But it'll just be chopped up whatever vegetables. I'll even put lettuce in there if I chop it finely enough. I used to live in Hong Kong, and so they use a lot of lettuce in their cooking.
Yeah, lettuce soup is delicious.
Yeah.
Really good.
You can, because it goes with anything, it's a good bulker if you're putting in tomatoes and then carrots and all sorts.
That's a good tip, actually, because you often have a bit of a sad looking lettuce in the fridge, but if you know that you can cook them.
Yeah. And then I think in store cupboard, I've normally always got tinned tomatoes, chickpeas, and then masses of different spices, because if I'm staring in the fridge and there's just nothing, doing a poached egg with a lovely thick stew like that can be an easy go-to.
If in doubt, put an egg on it. So we're up to the final desert island dish of the day, which is the last dish you would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island.
Oh.
You're allowed three courses.
Oh, great.
The dish is misleading in that question.
Great. That really helps. And if I said I wanted to say Japanese, can I go all sorts? Can I have some sushi? Can I have some miso? Can I have a bit of teriyaki?
I'm very generous. So I'm going to say yes. Yeah.
Okay. So it would be like going to my favorite Japanese restaurant to start.
Where is your favorite Japanese restaurant?
Oh, it would probably be in Asia.
Okay.
But in London, there's one or two that actually Eat Tokyo, terrible name, but just behind Notting Hill Station.
Oh my goodness. That's really good. Yeah. Really good.
Fish cuts.
Yeah, might edit that out so no one else goes there.
It's quite small.
It's really small.
So I'd probably have a real feast of Japanese, and then I would have a cheese platter of all sorts of cheeses and condiments. And then I'm going to go basic with some ice cream. Yes. But I have all sorts of flavors. I love ice cream.
Nothing wrong with that, Jenny.
And then I'd probably pop and pop my way into heaven.
We'll float you over to the desert island. You're allowed to take one luxury item.
Can I take Spotify, or does that not work once I'm...
I mean, I think you can. Yeah. Like, you're not allowed the internet, but we'll make it work.
Yeah.
Well, basically, we'll just give you like a never ending music supply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be lovely.
You can have that. And with that, we're going to cast you off. Thank you so much for letting us hear your desert island dishes.
Thank you. Very fun.
I mean, isn't that a cool business? I love how the power of a word, from chutney to relish, can change a business. You hear that kind of thing all the time. I mean, I guess it's the whole premise behind marketing, but it's kind of fun when you hear about it in action. I can vouch for the deliciousness of the spicy tomato chutney, which is genuinely amazing. So, so good in a sandwich and with just about anything. It's so fresh and, well, it's just great. I almost edited out her recommendation of Eat Tokyo, which happens to be one of my favorites, but I like you all too much, so I wouldn't deprive you of an excellent recommendation like that. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and do leave a review, as it really helps more listeners to find the podcast, which is great. Thank you and good night. I mean, goodbye. Thank you and goodbye.